Welcome back to Copper Country Today, and during this segment, I will be joined by Congressman Dan Benishek. He is kind enough to spend some time up here in our neck of the woods in the Houghton Hancock area, and very kind to take some of that time out, because I know you're very busy, to come in and speak with me. Dr. Dan Benishek, welcome to Copper Country Today.
Thanks for having me on, Rick. Appreciate it.
Now, of course, before you got up here, we were having some bitterly cold weather, and we decided to change that just for your arrival.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I know. It's been great.
Now, you've had a chance so far this week to take in some sites at Michigan Tech and some other places. Tell us how your visit's gone so far.
It's gone real well. We went up to Calumet and talked to the National Park people up there and Park Commission. Some of the Park Commission members as well. I learned a little bit more about how that park is managed and how there's a local commission that helps with the management of the park and with their multiple partners that they have throughout the Keweenaw. So it was a really good visit for me to understand how that park partners with the local community, be sure that they're not having too much of a federal imprint on what's happening up here, and that the local people have a control over how this is working. And I think that's a great example of how these parks should actually work, because the feds come in and sometimes they do things that the local community doesn't really like, and we don't like to have that happen here in Northern Michigan. And then this park, the way they manage it here, this local commission has a lot of input to how the park runs, and make sure there's plenty of local input. And I think that's really the way it should be throughout. So I got to meet with those guys. And then I also got to visit some folks in Calumet, some of the great businesses around Calumet. We stopped in a Calumet machine where they're redoing the bridge parts for the lift bridge. So I got to see these big, huge chain link for the chain that lifts the bridge up. Got to see how they're machining those, and that work is happening right here in the Keweenaw. And I also went over to REL, which is a manufacturing plant. They're doing like state-of-the-art manufacturing, world-class technology right there in Calumet. And we also went over to Somero, that this concrete mechanical screeding that they make these screeds for concrete. They got the world market for concrete screeds, and they're made right here in Houghton, and they're supporting 300 jobs. And I was just amazed to see the great products they're making there, and promoting the jobs right here in Northern Michigan. And then today we spent the whole day pretty much at Michigan Tech learning about some of the great research they're doing there. We went to the biomedical engineering department and learned about how they bring university findings to the private sector and try to facilitate job creation. To me, Michigan Tech is a great example of how a university should be, in that 95% of their graduates get a job placement in the field of their study. And that's really what it should be for universities around the country. And we got to be really happy with the technology that Michigan Tech teaches to the young men and women of Michigan. And I'm just so proud to have been able to see all that, a lot of it this morning, and some of the great studies that they were doing. So it was really a great two-day visit in the area.
And those opportunities that are being created for people are so essential, because it's been said that our number one export here is our young people. There's not a lot of job opportunities for if you're a lifelong resident, you feel you had to go somewhere else and get a job. And then in turns, these companies are trying to recruit people to come here. And so what they're doing over at Michigan Tech is, basically providing education for people so that they can do the jobs that are available here.
Well, yeah, they're doing, for example, they showed me their new collaboration with Central Michigan University. They're teaching physical therapists, and they have a great technical program here at Michigan Tech, and they have a clinical program down at CMU, and they have this great audiovisual center where you're actually seeing patients down there with a camera, and they're talking to professors down there and then students up here. And there is a need for physical therapists in Northern Michigan, and you get a student that goes to school up here, gets their training up here, that student is more likely to stay in Northern Michigan and do their career here, which is what we want. So There is a need for physical therapists. We want them to be able to stay here, and recruitment is sometimes a problem getting, you know, doctors and other medical professionals to live and work in Northern Michigan. You know, if they're not from here, they don't really get what it's like to live up north. You know, I mean, I wanted to live and work in Northern Michigan, so I went to medical school so I could get a job in the UP. Because, you know, I became an engineer. I was thinking, well, if I become an engineer, I'll have to go work somewhere else. You know, luckily here at Michigan Tech and in Northern, Northern Michigan here, that we've got a center where we're developing small businesses where some of these skilled people can, work in a startup or get a job up here. It's a great community for that. And, you know, just so proud to be able to see part of it today.
We see a lot of people when they do come up here, whether it's for school or for a job, they enjoy it and they want to stay, and we'd like to keep them here. And you mentioned on engineers, Michigan Tech's, the MTech Smart Zone is also doing quite a bit of that to create opportunities for engineers to not only get their schooling here, but also to, you know, find employment, or at least get started out with some of their co-op jobs that they have there. So we're definitely seeing
more of that. Yeah, no, it's fabulous.
Now, over the last year or so, we've had a big change in the face of our health care up here in the Upper Peninsula. Duke LifePoint has come in. What we're seeing is, you know, movement from, you know, our old system to how they're presenting health care here. Now, from your seat in Washington, how do you see that affecting or changing for people's availability to get health care?
Well, frankly, I'm worried about people's ability to get access to quality care. The local hospitals are straining to stay viable under Obamacare because of the way that Obamacare is funded. It basically cuts payments to local hospitals, Medicare payments, you know, to take care of Medicare patients. It wants to cut the payments that makes the local hospitals. So having a viable local hospital is becoming harder and harder to achieve. This is a rural district. You know, we've got in my district multiple small rural hospitals that are, you know, they're viable right now, and they've had to make cuts. But, you know, I'm very concerned about the long-term viability of them because, the way that healthcare is changing under the president's healthcare bill. That's why I've been an opponent of the president's healthcare bill. You know, since before I got elected, it was one of the reasons I ran for Congress in the first place, because as a doctor taking care of patients, frankly, I want to work for the patient. You know, the doctor, I think, is the best off working for the patient instead of working for some entity that is not the patient, okay? It's the hospital system or, you know what I mean? And they're becoming directed to where to send patients. And how patients are cared for, make sure they're done in the most economic way, and not enough communication with the patient so that the patient is actually in charge of healthcare. I want to work for the patient so that I'm an advocate for the patient. You know, when the patient has to, when you have to go to the doctor, you're kind of getting into some kind of a healthcare system that you're not really familiar with, and you rely on your doctor to kind of negotiate your interaction with the healthcare system, right? He's the guy that knows how to do it, or she's the gal that knows how to deal with the healthcare system. So, to me, it's very important to work for the patient, and I think the patient gets the best care that way. And I think the president's healthcare bill is forcing us into a system where the doctor no longer works for the patient. He's working for some kind of a system, or he's working for somebody else, because it's very difficult for the doctor to remain in private practice because of all the rules that are coming out. You know, with the president's healthcare law, you have to have the electronic medical record, which costs, you know, $100,000 for a doctor to get an electronic medical record thing, and it costs them a couple thousand dollars a month to maintain it for the IT guys. And, you know, a guy in private practice working for he can't afford that. So he has to work for some system that, you know, develops the electronic medical record, and he works for it because it becomes against the law for him to not have an electronic medical record. So, I mean, it's driving medicine toward that different sort of a model than we've had in the past. And it, frankly, scares me. And, you know, I want to continue to work on repealing the president's health care bill and making sure that patients have access to health care, you know, low cost, you know, personal service from physicians and providers. So, you know, I've been working to make that happen, but it's been tough under this administration.
We're in tax time right now, and for a lot of people, whether they were they benefited from the Affordable Care Act or not, when they go to file their taxes, they're finding out it affects them in ways they weren't expecting. What have you been hearing?
Well, I haven't heard that much about the tax implications from people yet. But I started to hear stories like you're referring to that, a lot of the middle class people aren't going to be getting a tax refund they expected because they're going to they made too much to be eligible for a subsidy for their health care, and the subsidy they got for their health care, they're going to have to pay back. So there's been a lot of anxiety about what exactly is going to happen at tax time, for the average, working family and their health care costs.
The retroactive nature of the penalty was what caught me off guard, was that there was a date required to sign up for health insurance, but that date was later on in the year. Well, if you signed up in May or got your insurance in June, the penalty was actually retroactive. You would be charged a prorated amount for the time that you weren't covered if you weren't covered going into this year, and that was during the year of 2014. So those are kind of the things that were, I know from personal experience and other people I've talked to, my tax preparer, that a lot of people weren't expecting. When they get the bill, nobody expects to get the bill for something like this. It's free, so nobody, then they do get the bill.
Well, that's the problem. It's not free. We're all paying for it. Most people I've talked to in the last several years have had a huge increase in their health care insurance costs and a decrease in the amount of coverage they're actually getting from their policy. And it hasn't been a good deal for most people. The vast majority of people that I've contacted my office are deeply disappointed in the way that the health insurance has gone under the new law. Frankly, we need to open up the health insurance business to have more competition available. Right now we've lost insurance companies in the state of Michigan. There's very little competition for your health insurance dollar because the companies are going out of business. And what we really need is we need to open up competition across state lines. Like, for example, your car insurance, you can buy from any company in the country. Even though you live in Michigan, there's thousands of companies you can buy health insurance or car insurance from. You can't do that with health insurance. Why don't we have a more competitive market and buy just the insurance that you want, not what the government mandates you to carry? Because everybody's different. A person in their 20s may not want the kind of insurance that a person in their 50s or 60s wants. And why shouldn't the individual have an opportunity to pick and choose what they can afford and what they want to do? And that's what is the big drawback for the president's health care bill.
And that battle continues in Washington. I also want to spend some time talking about some of the things that you've been involved in recently. You've been fairly busy lately. I know you are,
absolutely.
But been essential to a new funding to help battle invasive species in the Great Lakes. Certainly something we're concerned here. A lot of work goes from Michigan Tech to study that problem in Lake Superior. And, the invasive species, the whole Asian carp especially. I was hearing about this when I was downstate, the doom and gloom of the Asian carp invading the Great Lakes. And it seemed to take a while for people to start taking that seriously, but now it seems that message is coming across.
Well, I think the frustration that I felt when I was there is it's been taking the Corps of Engineers a long time to get the plan in place. So what are we going to do to deal with this Invasive Species Act? Well, they put together a plan. It took them 2 or 3 years to develop what the plan is. It's going to actually take maybe 20 to 30 years to implement the plan to keep the Asian carp out of the Great Lakes. But in the meantime, they want a temporary solution involving these electrical grids in the rivers to keep the carp from going through. So it's been a kind of complicated process. But I think they've been really thorough in that, their goal is to keep the Asian carp out of the Great Lakes. And myself and other members of the Michigan delegation, most notably Candace Miller, have sponsored legislation to kind of speed that process up. and make sure that we're putting enough focus on the Great Lakes, because the Great Lakes is a huge asset for Michigan in as well as the Midwest. My district is the center of it. I have more lake frontage in my district than any other district in the country. We have 1,500 miles of waterfront in our district. That's more than any other district in the country. So what's important to us, I've been really focused on it. I became the chairman of the Invasive Species Caucus, along with a Democrat from California. We're working in a bipartisan fashion to make sure that Congress puts enough emphasis on funding and the coordination of funding. Right now, there's like 11 different agencies and 100 different programs that deal with the Asian, with invasive species. So why don't we coordinate that? So that's, there's a logical battle going on against invasive species. So we're happy to be, right in the middle of it. The president's budget, unfortunately, cuts funding to the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, which I'm adamantly opposed to. We want to maintain vigorous funding for the, restoration of the Great Lakes. And I think our Midwest cohort of Democrats and Republicans are going to fight that spending recommendation by the president and make sure that we're funded adequately. A lot of the funding that Michigan Tech here gets through its research center and the Great Lakes Research Center here at Tech is funded through the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, and they've been active on invasive species issues as well as other issues. So it's been a pleasure to be part of that effort.
Yeah, the zebra mussels in Lake Superior, one of the main concerns. And they even have the high school kids doing robotics and helping out with detecting zebra mussels and just doing everything they can to, a nice cooperative effort to battle that, because it is, that lake's ours, and we really want to keep it as pristine as possible.
Well, the mussel issue is another one, and that's one of the issues not only in Lake Superior, but in Lake Michigan too. There's this invasive of these quagga mussels and zebra mussels, so it's a really dramatic effect, and we got to continue to do research and monitor that and try to prevent further species from coming in.
Probably learning a lot more about marine biology than you ever thought.
This is a job where you get to learn a lot, to tell you the truth. It's exciting. There's so many issues that face us here, and it's been a privilege to be able to learn all this stuff and meet the people that I have. Let me just mention one more thing that we're really emphasizing in our office, too, and that is Veterans Affairs. As I worked at the VA hospital in Iron Mountain for 20 years, and now I get to be the chairman of the subcommittee on health at the VA. So we're doing what I call my Veterans Action Initiative to try to really improve care to veterans, not only here in northern Michigan, but across the country. We're doing a lot of good things legislatively, changing the Department of Veteran Affairs to hopefully a place so that they care a lot more about veterans rather than their own institution. And then we're doing also some local things here in the district, what I call the Veterans Assistance Fairs. We just did our first Veteran Assistance Fairs down in Sheboygan, and it turned out to be pretty successful. We had people from the VA hospital in Detroit, people from Iron Mountain, people from the Michigan State Department of Veteran Affairs come to a National Guard Armory in Sheboygan and provide services in one spot where veterans can get assistance with all kinds of different benefits, health benefits, education benefits, disability benefits. And we had like 200 people show up, and we got like 75 new veterans signed up to get assistance with care. So we're going to do that around the district. The next one is going to be in Marquette on April 7th. So we're looking forward to doing these veteran assistant fairs throughout the district. In the local areas, we only have one in the Western UP coming up yet, too. But we're learning how to do it. We're learning to get the right people there. And we're hoping that we can encourage veterans to, if they've been struggling with getting access to the care that, the veterans, the benefits that they have, because they just, couldn't find their veteran service officer or it was too much trouble, we're going to help make it easier for them to get into the system and see if we can stimulate, more access to care by our local veterans.
Now, the recent tax breaks for small businesses who hire minorities and for veterans that have been touted by President Obama and others. Do those moves go far enough?
Well, I think our veterans need all the help they can get. A lot of them are returning from the wars that we've had in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're not as tied into like the veteran service organizations as the older veterans, the Vietnam veterans, the Korean, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're not a member. They don't really join up to the VFW or the American Legion. And we need to have a better system of getting them tied into the community. You know, I'm in favor of a lot of the breaks that our veterans get. And if there's somebody out there that thinks they deserve a benefit, I would suggest that they get hold of our office and contact us so that we can help them with education benefits, with, you know, some of the veteran-owned businesses have opportunity to bid on things with the government, and there's certain benefits for them. And if you're interested and curious about what you might be benefit for, I would suggest you call our office and you know, let us try to help you get the most you can get.
Now, sort of in the same light, oversight of the whole veterans program, I know that you expressed some concern over bonuses that were recently paid out, and that was this appropriate?
Well, there's these hospitals under investigation for fraud, and they're still giving the directors bonuses. I mean, it's unbelievable that this is actually occurring, and it would never happen in the private sector. You know, to me, a bonus is something that you get for superior production. You know, not something that you're entitled to because you have a job, especially if your hospital's under investigation for fraud. You know, there should be more prosecutions of people that have, you know, broken the law. And we've hopefully made it easier for the administration to fire the people that need to be fired. I mean, it's almost impossible to get rid of some of these people that have done the bad stuff, because they have, you know, their employment contracts don't allow them to get fired. And that's something we need to change. We need to make sure that the people are accountable to our veterans and make it a leaner, meaner administration. You know, the bureaucracy of that VA is like got 13 layers of bureaucratic levels that shouldn't be that way. And we're hoping that the new administrator, you know, streamlines the process so it gets done and, you know, gets rid of the dead wood and the people that have been doing this malfeasance. And, you know, that's the battle that we do there all the time.
Now, I could probably talk to you easily for an hour or more on a lot of these issues, but I'm down for a couple more minutes here. So I did want to ask you about your opposition to the banning of the AR-15 common bullet. Now, I'm not a rifle enthusiast. I've never fired one of these weapons. So I can, you know, say from, you know, probably among masses who would say the same thing, what's the big deal about this one rare bullet? And I ask that question in that same tone purposely.
Well, I don't know that it's a rare bullet. It's a very common bullet. The AR-15 is a very common rifle. I think we have the right to bear arms in this country. And if you can eliminate the ammunition that one of the most common rifles in the country uses, you're eliminating that rifle, basically. That's illegal as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I believe that we have the right to bear arms and that this is an attempt to limit that right. And I think it's wrong. I'm going to, you know, fight it with all my power.
Now, the change would make the bullet reclassified as armor-piercing, which would then make it unavailable to the public. Is there any basis for making that change?
Not that I believe in. It's just a very common firearm, just like a 30-06 or any kind of a deer rifle would be the same type of a rifle. You talk about any kind of a rifle bullet, as far as I know.
If the public is willing to look away on this, say, well, it's not. I don't own an AR-15. We got hunting rifles, or you may even support handguns, but this is something, you know, it's an assault rifle gun, so you don't. You know,
people throw that assault rifle down to try to scare you. It's a rifle. Mm-hmm. And they try to make it sound bad, but it's a rifle. It's a tool that, you know, we use, and we have the right to use. And I think this is an assault on our Second Amendment rights, and we have to fight it, you know, every step of the way.
Congressman Benishek, I want to thank you for coming and visiting us here at Houghton and Hancock area and for coming in to Copper Country Today. I always enjoy talking to you.
Well, thanks for having me on, Rick. Appreciate it.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.